Number two, that is very difficult for them to acquire the children. The Zimbabweans to acquire a traveling passport, if they apply, it will take 5 years or even 10 years for them to get an ID, what's called a passport, to be able to come to South Africa and shop and go back. It's one area that I think, as much as we appreciate some of these, you know, initiatives that are happening in the region, we need to specifically position ourselves as this portfolio committee and parliament to say, how do we make sure that we help Zimbabweans? Now they have to build the country. The government of national unity is in place. The professionals, Zimbabwean professionals, are all over the world. Some of them are in South Africa. Majority of them, in fact, are here. I'm talking of your teachers, your nurses, you know, your doctors, your engineers, you may name them, technicians and all of that. Some of them are in the streets in Cape Town here unemployed because they don't have papers. But how then do we come back and mobilize these Zimbabweans to be able to go back home and help rebuild the country? How do we do that? You know, when the economy has collapsed and all of that, I think that comes once again as parliament. Because it's not only the issue of the executive that it's only the executive that deals with this issue. We have a responsibility, especially this portfolio committee called Home Affairs. It has that responsibility, that central responsibility, working together with other committees in parliament. We need to shape a way in which we start to engage, you know, with ordinary citizens of Zimbabwe that are sleeping on the streets, in the pavements and all of that, and begin to create that hope to them that we believe that this government of nations needs to hold on. And because one thing that is lacking is that there is no engagement with the population, especially those who have left, you know, outside Zimbabwe. So I think it's one challenge that we'll have to look at ourselves and then have a way in which maybe the next parliament and the next committee, when it comes in, we must be able to present a report that these are the issues that we have looked at as Portfolio Committee of Home Affairs, and therefore believe that the next parliament can take further those issues. So on that note, therefore, members, we will then go back to the IEC and then give the IEC to deal with the issues that we have raised that they must sort of present to Parliament this morning, and then we'll then proceed further. We'll then give members an opportunity to ask questions and make recommendations and all of that. And we respect very strongly the independence of the IEC. We're not going to be like interfering with your day-to-day work, but we understand that you are still accountable to Parliament. Out of that, there is an independence, but you are still accountable to Parliament. And we have been working quite very well between, you know, the committee and yourself. That's why even the chairperson always predicts that these are the questions that the portfolio committee is going to ask when we go to Parliament. It's based on that particular understanding of how we have been working together. So on that note, I'll then give yourself a CEO to the commissioners who are here to introduce everybody who's here and then get that presentation. Welcome, Honorable Mr. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Before you allow IEC to present, I hear you summarizing but forgetting to tell us about the request and the terms of reverence we gave to the Auditor General, Chairperson. Instead of getting response from the Auditor General, we see it on the news, on the newspaper, on page 8 of the Sunday Times. They are responding to our request, Chairperson. You remember the Auditor General, we instructed them to go and investigate whether Who Am I Online have followed the procedure. Yes, Chair.
So I sort of deliberately left that thing, but what we'll do, members, I think I have noted the same. I mean, I only saw it in the newspaper that the Auditor General has already issued his findings to the Minister of Home Affairs. And ourselves, we have not. I even asked the committee section yesterday to check if he has tabled anything. So far, there's no information. What we know is that the Auditor General has given his report, and what we're going to do will be to check with the Office of the Minister and to check with the Auditor General. Because, yes, it's true that we adopted a terms of reference, which were about 17 points that we gave to the Auditor General to look at in his investigation. of the WomenMai online project, which was awarded to Kijima. So on that note, we'll definitely have to get that information. We'll talk to the minister and see if she cannot come and brief the portfolio committee, even the Auditor General himself. But can we sort of, we'll deal with that at the end of the meeting as to how we should sort of proceed with those issues. But I've noted that part. You'll just remind me as we close the meeting that I'm going to bring it back. I'll note you. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to you and to honorable members. I've been requested to introduce the delegation. On my immediate left is Commissioner Terry Zelani, and next to him is Commissioner Fanny Fanemeve, and next to Commissioner Fanemeve is Mosotho Moyetsa, Deputy Chief Electoral Officer responsible for electoral operations, and in front of me is Stephen Lentry, who is the manager in the office of the Chief Electoral Officer. And my name is Pansy Tlakula. I'm the Chief Electoral Officer. Chairperson, we, in terms of the letter that you wrote to the Chairperson of the Commission dated 9th February, this year we are to address the Portfolio Committee on three issues. One, the final voter registration report, then the result system, and also the allegation made by the IFP. What I'm going to do quite briefly, Chair, mindful of your remarks that you have a packed program, we're going to very quickly go through the report of the last registration weekend that we have, and it's going to be on the screen. Starting on page one, we simply look at the registration activity by province. Maybe the screen is not visible enough. I hope you have circulated the copies. Thank you very much. We can see from the presentation that Gauteng is the province which recorded the highest number of new registrations, followed by KZN. And if you look at that report, throughout, Gauteng is the one that had the most activity, whether we're talking about re-registration or in where people have moved or re-registration in the same city. And it is significant really to point out that in the past, the registration activity has not been high in the urban areas, particularly in housing, but this time around, it appears that there is some activity or heightened activity in the urban areas. And for this past registration weekend, Chairperson, we recorded 1.5 million new registrations. And I must point out that this is a record number of new registrations that we have ever picked up in a single registration weekend. And if we combine the figures from the first registration weekend that took place in November to this with this registration weekend, we now have 3.3 million new registrations on our voters roll, which is also a record number. And we depict that as well graphically just to show the registration activity of the 7th and 8th of February. The following slide, the next slide, we looked at the new registration of the 7th and 8th of November by gender. And once again, you realize that Gauteng registered 260,000 women compared to 204,000 men, followed by KZN as well, where more women were registered than men. Of significance in this slide is that Northwest is the only province where you had more men registering than women. We have been pointing out that we're disturbed by our registration figures because before the registration weekend of the 7th and 8th, we had 55% of registered voters on the voters roll being women, compared to 42%. But after this registration weekend, if you look at least the statistics after the 7th and 8th of February, we now have 51% of registered voters being men and 48% being women. So that sort of leveled up a bit, and we are pleased with that outcome, because as I've indicated, we're quite worried about the participation of men. And we also depict that in graphic form. We then go to the third slide, where we look at registration by age, pointing once again that more people who registered were in the category 20 to 29 years at 434,000. And in that same category for male, it was 393,000. And if we look at the total statistics, I think most of the people who registered in this registration weekend were young people between the ages of 16 and 29. They made up about 78% of the total registration figures, debunking the myth that young people are not interested in participating in voting. I think the campaign that we mounted, that was targeted, one at young people, secondly at men, yielded some results, because young people went out in their numbers to register. We also depict chairperson in the next slide, registration by province and age. Also, particularly in the graph, looking at age group 16 to 29, you can see that Gauteng recorded the highest number, followed by KZN, followed by Eastern Cape and Western Cape. But that age category, we have to congratulate our young people. They've done extremely well. In the next slide, we compare registration figures from before voter registration campaign of November to after registration campaign or voter registration weekend of February. We look at the voter roll as it stood on the 5th of November. It was at 20.1. And after the registration weekend of the 8th and 9th, we increased our voters' roll to 21 million. And when we started the voter registration weekend of the 7th, the voters' roll stood at 21.6 million. And after the voter registration of the 7th and 8th February, it now stands at 23 million, which is an overall increase of 6.51%. And we also depict that graphically in the next slide. Also, you will see that Gauteng leads, followed by KZN, which is a pattern that we established there from the beginning. In the next slide, we look at the growth of our voters' roll since we started with the voters' roll in 1999. And there has been a steady increase of our voters' roll, starting in 1999 at 18 million. And closing for the elections of 2009 at 23 million, which is quite a pleasing result of the steady increase of our voters' roll. And the next slide as well speaks to that. It just shows the activity before the voter registration of November to after the registration campaign of the 7th and 8th. And we also depict that graphically per age in the next slide, where we look at the 18 to 19 right up to the age of 80, what the registration activity is. And pleasing to note that the biggest activity is in the age category of 30 to 39, which is quite pleasing. Chairperson, that's our presentation, as I indicated. I'm trying to save time. I guess on the issue of the IFP, Chairperson, as you indicated in your introductory remarks, that the Chairperson of the Commission has written to you to indicate that this is a matter that we are investigating as a Commission. We have requested the IFP to give us details of the persons that we supposed to have removed from the voters' roll. We have requested them to give us the names of those people, the ID numbers, and the location where these people are supposed to have registered, because we take this allegation quite seriously. That's why we want to go to the bottom of it. And without prejudging the outcome of the investigation that we're going to be conducting, Chairperson, just in terms of the system and the mechanism for registering voters, I can state without any fear of contradiction that it is technically impossible to remove a person from the voters' roll. What we do when we register people, they go to the voting station, they fill in a form which we call a registration one form, Reg 1. We also scan their ID and give them a sticker to show that they have applied for registration, because at that time, what they do is application for registration. We upload then all this data through satellite and also through landline onto our systems. We compile the voters' roll, and before we finalize it, we sanitize it, in the sense that we run the voters' roll against the population register to see if there are people who applied for registration who are not South Africans. Secondly, to see whether there are people who probably are deceased, because we have had instances of people who are on the voters' roll, or sometimes they're deceased. So we make sure that we remove everybody who is not supposed to be on the voters' roll. And that's what we do on a monthly basis. That is why I say, one, the allegation also was that we removed members of a particular political party. When we register people, Chairperson, we don't ask them for their political affiliation. We simply take down their details and we go through the process that I have just highlighted. But having said that, Chairperson, I want to stress that we are investigating. We are waiting for the IFP to give us the information that we have requested so that we can go to the bottom of this complaint. Thank you, Chair. Regarding the other issue on the results and how we're going to be capturing electronically, my colleague Mosotho Moyepsa will make a presentation on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Before we get to the next presentation on the capturing the results, can we deal with the two areas raised, the voter registration and the IFP? And followed by Khosim Romo.
Chairperson, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. I want to thank the IEC and the manner in which they are handling the whole matter, and I hope we can reach a mutually agreeable solution on this. You know, there's an awful lot of urban legend out there. I think you're fully aware of it as well. I mean, I had a call from someone reporting, I think second or third hand to me, that she just received her ID and she found she wasn't registered. You see, so out there are many, many stories going. So in a way, I'm glad this has come through. I'm glad the way it's being handled, and I thank you for it.
All right, now thanks, Inga. We'll
thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the explanation and especially the newly registered people. I'm very happy about that. Chairperson, my question is on the political affiliation. Does the voters' roll know who am I voting for? Because what I think is that your vote is a secret. It ends there. So I just wanted to know if it knows who am I voting for. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Mama.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Let me start with the registration, Chairperson. On the last page of your presentation, you showed some graph there with regard to ages up to 80. Now my question is, I just want to find out what about those who are older than 8? Are they removed from the voter rolls? My second question, Chairperson, with regard to the same issues raised by yourself on behalf of us all about the complaint of removal of certain people on the voter roll, Chairperson. I just want to find out from the presenter, because of the maladministration at Home Affairs, where they declared some people deceased, meanwhile they are still alive. So after you discover that they are still alive, what is the procedure to put them again on the voter's roll? Thank you, Chairperson.
The point that I said I missed earlier, remember I spoke about something that I'm missing but I'll deal with it late, is the issue of these overseas voters. I would not put it in the agenda. I think we missed it by the time that I wanted the committee section to sort of, you'll share with us briefly what has been the outcome of the court and what are the implications. We'll deal further with that part later. In fact, when we finish with the presentation of the capturing of the results, I want us just to go back to that part because you deal with it directly. So we want to deal with the issue of overseas voters and so that we are very clear, all of us. Okay. The last one will be short. No? Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I think thank you for the hard work which has been demonstrated by the IEC for registration. I think we are really proud of the work that you have shown to the South Africans. But coming to the point that is being raised here, maybe if we can get a clarity on the very same issue, I think Khosi did make that point, which I also want to emphasize, on the mistakes that sometimes might happen of people being regarded as deceased, whereas they are still alive and kicking, and also the issue of age group. You will find that a person did register, did vote, but at some point you will find that the Home Affairs will regard him as a very, very young person, less than 16 years. What is happening there? Because at some point you will find that a person is born 58 and then all of a sudden, when he applied or she applied for an ID, the year is 20 years younger than that. And then there is also this issue of lost ID and people who then get married. Sometimes you find that you have people who get then married, they have to change their surname. What is happening? What I know is that they automatically get changed by Home Affairs one way or the other. Is there a linkage of that thing? Because of, I also did receive that information to say I did went to for the checking in my voting district after getting married. But the problem that I am finding there is that in the voter's roll, my surname is not changed, and I'm still with an old surname. No, I did get a report. Yes. Somebody saying that to me on the voter registration of the 8th and the 9th. Also, some of those things will also put some questions about voters. Thank you.
About the same-sex marriage. Sometimes I know that members want to apply. It's not a problem.
Thank you for raising the last issue. Chair, yes, you, thank you, and may I just apologize firstly for being a little late. You did refer to the overseas voters. That was the issue that I was going to raise. You remember the last elections when you got all those emails from all over, and you might be well receiving them again. But Chair, I also wanted to just ask, should the application to the Constitutional Court succeed, what would be the implications? And might we as a portfolio committee have to sit again at short notice to amend the legislation on the assumption that it succeeds? If it doesn't succeed, but we just want to know what the implications are.
Except that the issue of the overseas voters will deal with immediately after the watch call.
Oh, I'm going not to give you a response now.
I'm going to give you an opportunity. We'll engage further on that issue.
Okay.
But for now, let us just deal with the issue of registration.
Fine.
And then and deal with the issues of, we have listened to the issue of the IP. I think we'll make a general comment.
Can I just then specify my question to the voters, Rob?
Yes, please.
As I understand, there are concerns about the voters' roll and names being removed. As I understand the process, the voters' roll will now be open for public scrutiny at a certain time where everyone can ascertain whether they're on the roll, and maybe we as a portfolio committee need to suggest that people need to check whether they are on. I think that is the legal avenue to allay concerns that have been raised about people being removed or whatever, that they then check whether they are on the voters' roll. If you could just clarify that for us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. My last question, Chairperson, with regard to the amending of age. Home Affairs have declared me that I was born in 1960. And then IEC have registered me as such. After I have amended the group, the Home Affairs to the correct age, and when I register as the person who amended my age, are they checking the previous record vis-a-vis the new records? Thank you, Chair.
General, what I am understanding is that the lines of engagement between the voters' roll and Home Affairs, the maintenance of the voters' roll lies with the IEC by law, but the feeding of information. And I think at some point they did raise some concerns about, you know, information coming from Home Affairs. I think that the point is relevant, but let us hear so that, you know, whatever that becomes, the outcome would, you still have to go back and sort out your Home Affairs at some point, based on what they've raised before. The CEO will respond to that, but I think it's one of the areas that we'll have to focus the energy on at some point. Making sure that the voter roll is accurate. The last point will be on my side, the migration, the internal migration. Because if you look at the migration of people from rural areas to urban areas, and are you able to pick up, especially with these numbers that you see, that Gauteng and the Eastern Cape, for example, Gauteng becomes the center of migration, internal migration, without looking at the other external migration. But internal migration tells you that majority of the people from villages, the urban area that they'll go to will be Johannesburg, will be KwaZulu-Natal, Durban becomes one of the main centers of attraction of migration. Are you able to pick up, out of this whole new registration, that a number of people were already registered but they've changed their address? Because you need to notify the Independent Electoral Commission when you move to another area. And how right is that watch for? Because I know for a fact that how they would always have the highest number informed by that migration. So, yeah, I think that's your response to you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to all the members for the questions. I will respond to some, and then the ones that I will leave out, I'll ask Mosotho to respond to them. Political affiliation, Chair, when we register people, all that we request or require from them is their IDs, their names, full names and surname, and their residential address. We don't ask for political affiliation because we respect the secrecy of the vote, as the law requires us to do. Over 80, yes, we do register people over 80. If you look at the slide, because it says more than 80, it says 80 and above. So there is a category of 80 and above, and we do register people over the age of 80. Obviously, when we get to 100 or so, sometimes with technology, you know, the technology probably says you are underage or something, but we have had those kind of problems, which we picked up during the first registration weekend. But we had to amend our software so as to pick up even people who were born many, many, many years ago, who were initially rejected by the system. But we register everybody who is alive. With a deceased persons, I think it's a challenge. I always tell a story of a young girl, probably in her 20s, in 2004. It was in 2006. She came to the results center because she had gone to a registration, to a voting station in Johannesburg to go and register, and the presiding officer informed her that she was deceased. And she came to us at the results center in a state of panic, telling us that, look, Home Affairs says I'm dead, but here am I, I'm not dead. But those kind of cases, there is quite very little that we can, we can't do much about. But what we do when it comes to registration, in 2006, we had about, I think it was 500,000 people who were indicated as deceased, according to the population register. But they had physically come to the voting station to register. So we have at least solid proof that they are not deceased, because they had physically presented themselves for registration. And what we did with Home Affairs, as far as those people were concerned, we're able to work together. Not to resurrect them, I shouldn't say that. But at least to put them back on the population register, because we had proof that they were alive. So we do this with them. It's a long process. We have to do this before we certify the voters' roll. We have to go through each and every name that has a question mark next to it. And we're able to do that and to restore these people back onto the population. So it is doable, although it takes a long time. But if a person presents themselves on voting day at the voting station and they are indicated as deceased on the voter's roll, we can't do anything about it at that point. We can correct it before we certify the voter's roll. I hope I've been able to answer that question. I will ask.
We can deny a person the right to vote because of the mistakes of Home Affairs.
You can, because, Chair, if they appear on the deceased portion of the voters' roll, we as an election management board, we can't allow them to vote because they are not on the voters' roll. The law does not give us the right to do that, because we only allow people who are registered on the voters' roll. So if they are deceased, we can't give them a vote.
Where is Freedom Fund? Why Freedom Fund doesn't come to this meeting? Who knows where is Freedom Fund? Because they must always come here. One of the things that we're dealing with, in as much as, you know, we want to be running and calling for the Constitutional Court, you know, to confirm the overseas voters, you know, we have a lot of problems. We have huge problems here. And then these people are not interested, you know, and this is a platform again that, you know, before members, you know, because they're represented in Parliament, but the only thing is to run, spend millions and millions of rands to go to court and want to win and celebrate after that. When we're supposed to be dealing with the details, but let me not politic now, I'll politic later. But I think these are some of the things that we'll definitely have to deal with. If at that time you had over 500,000 people that they have to go back and check again their names, how many more do we still have now? You know, which I'm very worried, because when we deal with, you know, the everyday work of this committee, we deal with those things of people who wrong spelling, wrong ID number, who are declared dead, whether still alive, blood, all of them. And these are some of the things that do it. And you know, I'm raising this because I saw in KwaZulu-Natal, there are people who are now lawyers, in fact. It was reported in one of the newspapers, the regional newspapers, who are taking the Department of Home Affairs to court almost every day on the right to a citizenship when people do not have access to a document. And those guys are winning the cases every day, and the department is losing every day. Now I'm looking at the situation, comes the election, one lawyer picked up that this client, or at lines, not even one child, a voter, takes the matter to the High Court or to the Constitutional Court that I was denied my right to vote by Home Affairs that has declared me dead. And therefore, you know, I'm saying that these are some of the things that we'll definitely have to look at and really work very closely with our department, you know, in trying to solve some of the challenges that are still facing, but are quite very new challenges that we watch for. And it comes back now to that debate that will be fully laid down, the right to vote, and having, you know, courts having to declare, you know, whatever that they have declared, but we'll deal with that later. Six, I saw that you're raising, now they were not finished to respond to your question, before we watch for, before we, no, there's no follow-up now. Yeah, but can you take it later? Is there a follow-up on that? Okay. Mike.
Thank you, Chairperson. And again, we must remember, at Home Affairs, there are people who have dual ID. Meanwhile, another one is staying in KwaZulu-Natal. Another one is staying in Limpopo.
Okay, we'll give you that. Not dual citizenship. Dual ID. All right, no, that's fine. We'll deal with that. Can you respond to all the questions? I think the whole thing comes back again to Home Affairs. But it's coming in the point that says, how do we maintain the voters' role? How do we make sure that we feed information properly to the voters' role? That's the civic service of the department that deals with, you know, your birth certificate, you know, issuing of ID books, removal of people from the population register and all of that. So it's quite a very huge, what you call a arrangement there. But at some point, I think we need to satisfy ourselves at some point, you know, to understand that whole, you know, arrangement of the maintenance. But that's where the point comes in of the IFP leader having made that statement that people are removed from the voter roll. And maybe in your investigation, you're going to find that something, I don't want to say it now, but maybe something to do with either that movement of people from one point to another point. But if you are already in the voter roll, there's no way that you can be recorded otherwise. Unless when information that goes, remember last time we received information that over 30,000 death records are sent to the IEC per month. It's not me, it was what was reported by the IEC and Home Affairs, right? So it's clear that, you remember I even made a call that, you know, we must really save our young people, and what, because most of them are young people that we're losing in the country. And I think these are quite very serious issues that the Parliament should engage itself. But you can proceed to respond into your...
Chair, we are the sole custodians of the voters' rolls.
Yes.
So Home Affairs simply assists us with sanitization of the voters' rolls in the sense of removing the deceased people. Because as you know, we run the voters' roll, as I indicated, against the population register to remove some people who are probably, who have registered, who are permanent residents, who are not supposed to register in terms of the law. So I'm saying that in response to the allegation by the IFP, it's not technically possible for Home Affairs to remove anybody from the voters' roll because we are the sole custodians of the voters' roll. I'll deal just with one question and then ask Mufuti to respond to the others. If a person changes his or her surname after marriage, what happens? I'm hoping that there will be a day when men also have to change their surnames after marriage. Does that feel, how is it like to lose your identity and assume another? because we use the ID number for registration, even if a person changes the surname, it will not affect the voters' roll if the ID number, remains the same.
At that point, you still have the law that we passed in Parliament, the alteration of sexual exchange law, that an individual, through that a doctor's operation, can acquire a different sex, and automatically you can go to Home Affairs and ask for change of your sexual, your number, your ID number. It does happen. In fact, it's not like fixed. Those who are going through alteration of sex change, they go and acquire new identity, meaning that they can be identified as, you no longer Mr. Now, Mr. Whatever, Miss Whatever. So I'm saying it does happen. It's not like it's fixed. But
because they'll have a new identity number that indicates that their sex has changed, then they have to re-register.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, members, honourable members of the committee. There are three questions I'm dealing with. One is Bantatis Kosana on the exceptions. The CEO has touched on them. Lekgoshi has touched on them. There are a number of things that happen. One is now when we upload or when we verify the voters' roll against the population register, we have requested the Department of Home Affairs to indicate in the event where a new identity number has been given. Let's give an example of an incorrect date of birth that was given previously. When the new identity number is issued, Home Affairs links the new identity number with a previous identity number. You will notice on our voters' roll, or when you check your identities, your registration details on the website, it brings up your names after you have given the ID number. But it also has a field at the top that will be empty if you've never changed your identity number, but it will have your previous identity number if you have changed one. So that is out of the way. There was a question asked about the issues of surnames, and the CEO has dealt with it. A question asked on the opportunity to check the certified copy of the voter's roll. In fact, yes, we will publish a certified copy of the voter's roll this Friday, but the opportunity to check one's details on the roll is always there. It's always available on our toll-free number. It's always available by SMS facility, and it's always available by visiting our website. And the last issue was the question of persons who may have had difficulties registering because of their age. We often don't pick up the problem with young people. And in fact, that problem was, one would call it a century problem, where someone was born over 100 years ago. Because of the length of the identity documents number. If they are, for example, they were born in 1901, it'll be 01 something something, and somebody born in 2001 will also have 01 there. But what we do in those instances, because the person has been to the voting station, we then take their details down, and we are able to capture them, even at the voting station, without scanning their number, but capturing that number on the zip and bypassing the century problem. I think those are the issues that were raised that we needed to deal with. No one will go home without being given the opportunity to register if they qualify. That I can assure the committee.
Thank you. There's no breakfast, no lunch. The Parliament does not have money. I'm not sure if you serve in the committees of Parliament. It's not a question of great trade. You really make us suffer now. But the information is that there's no lunch, there's no breakfast. It's only water and tea because Parliament does not have money. And they are going to roll over, millions again at the end of the year, financial year. But it's fine. We'll proceed. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My follow-up with regard to many people, when they go for old age grants, they are discovered that somebody with similar ID number have already got the,
the money in Limpopo. Now your computer can able to detect whether this ID number has been used somewhere.
If I may respond, in the event that an ID number, which is valid, is registered in one province, and we have a registration opportunity, that same ID number registered in another province, we have a very simple process in the IEC. There is an audit trail on the voter's roll. That will reflect where the individual was initially registered and where they went to register thereafter. Should it be reported that this was an incident of fraud, which has not happened as far as I'm aware, it's very easy for us to go back to the record and identify, follow the steps backwards. Our voter's roll, as we have now, has every single record of a voter since we started registering voters in the manner that we do in this country.
I think it goes back to the point that I raised earlier. In your categories of people that you sort of put correctly here, this is the numbers of people who have registered. I've raised the issue of migration, internal migration, and I don't see in your slide where you say, out of these numbers, either so many people, either it may be the province or for Gauteng, for example, out of the numbers that we have, so many of them were like changing the address, having moved, because they're able to read that particular address. Yeah.
In fact, the CEO dealt with it. If I may take you to her first slide, where it deals with registration activity by province, you will see the first column is province, and then it says new registration, gives you the percentage of provincial total, and then it says re-registrations at different VDs. That column is for people that have migrated.
In Gauteng, you have 498. That's my point. Thank you very much. We can go to the next point that you want to enjoy very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Susanna, I thought we were closing it.
I just want to make a follow-up on one which...
Yeah.
Chairperson, from the side of the IEC, whatever procedures they might follow, it might be correct for them to do that and then maybe say we can't agree for a person to vote because of this recorded as deceased. But on our side, as political organization, I don't think that will go well with us. But I think if ever maybe a person has been registered at some point and then now is recorded to be a deceased, because of anything can happen. If we are going to vote on the 22nd, 30 days before the voting day, they will have to update their and then mistakenly so they can say so and so is deceased. Can they find a way of ensuring that since that you are on the voter's roll, and then we give you a special arrangement to say, we will have to look into this matter, but you do vote, but vote separately. You are not going to be counted like a normal person. So, and so on. Sure. No, well, that's what I'm trying to put, because of we might pick up that a person who is a candidate for that matter is denied to vote. It can be in a municipality, maybe a ward councillor for that matter is denied to vote because of it's been recorded that he's a deceased. Thank you.
What I'm understanding, let me give you a few cakes. You want to go into this thing?
I wanted to deal with the same point long time ago. I thought the COO would come up with the answer which says, no, the onus is on us who are on the voters' roll, because we are given periods from one beginning of the year to the end of the year, wherever we are, to go to municipality offices, to go wherever and check whether you do appear on the voters' roll. I thought the straightforward answer would come from the CEO to say, no, if you get on the day of voting and you are told you are deceased, and she says there's nothing we can do on that day, but we must be warned that the onus is on us, because we are given days to go and check whether you still appear on the voters' roll. Engagement on that part. And I think what we should say will be to appreciate the work that is done by the Electoral Commission, especially on, you know, the campaign. We have raised this thing with you in the last elections and in between our engagement with the Portfolio Committee on the issues of mobilization of youth to register. And I think you have done quite very well. But not only yourself, but even political parties. I think political parties have played a major role here in mobilizing, you know, the youth, making sure that they go and vote, and especially those political parties with young youth, you know, you have your youth brigade, you have your youth leagues, you have your whatever that you call them. I think they have played the role. And by, that's the only way that will deepen our democracy, you know, electoral democracy. And the programs that we are running at schools, I think we can see the results here of the numbers of, you know, youth that we have registered. We want to applaud you for that part. And there were a number of challenges, in fact, in some areas where people find it quite difficult to reach to the IEC. And you know it, we have raised that part, especially in rural areas, and you know, moving from one point to another point to go to the voting station. But with the arrangement that I think you have put in place, we're able to reach out to a number. We want to do more. In fact, it's not only that. We want to see more of, you know, eligible voters registering and participating and voting for the party that they want to govern them in the next 5 years or, you know, for the rest of their life. So, no politics, man. I know you're going to respond.
But we cannot deal with that issue.
No, no, we're coming to that. We're still going to have this capturing of information electronically.
Well, I just want to endorse what you just said, Chair.
No, no, it's fine. That is...
just about the... Now, to commend the IEC on the registration...
I thought I'm speaking on behalf of all of you when I speak.
But I also want to just say, from my side, what a wonderful job they've done.
No, it's election time. I'll be very fine to speak. Okay, you can speak, Zohar. It's fine. I'll give the IP, I'll give the Food of Fund is not here. In fact, it's what is campaigning overseas now. And I don't care if they were here, don't hear what other parties are saying. But let me give
in
you
all sincerity, Chair. I think I visited a number of voting stations during the registration process, and I was very impressed with the staff, with the manning of the tables, and the number of new registrations.
Mm.
And as we've seen on the statistics, there's a very great excitement with this election. And I just want to commend the IEC. And at this stage, we're not anticipating any court actions from the ACTP side.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much. The Communist Party, oh, sorry. I think of the Communist Party. No, it's fine. Inka, do you have anything to say?
Well, I endorse what you and the Honourable Swart had said. I also went to many voting stations in the Greater Durban area, and they were extremely well run, and I have supported accordingly.
Meme, the ANC, and oh, we still have the DA. I don't see you today. What's wrong? Why is it so quiet?
Can you hear me now, Chairperson? My apologies, first of all, to you and to the committee and to the IEC for being late this morning. But I just want to endorse what my colleagues have said. I also was involved in registration, also in the Tequini Durban area. And as you well know, as I've said before, we did a wonderful job. And we're also not anticipating any court actions at this stage. Chairperson, thank you very much.
You know, those activities that take place at Quatemal, come to the committee. It will be very nice, really.
you know, rather than, you know, spending those millions, your membership is suffering on the ground. They don't even have money to go to mobilize people. You're spending the money at the court rather than free, you know, where you can engage with the IEC. It's free. I mean, reasonable, yeah. You don't spend 100,000 and hire the senior counsel when you have a parliament platform, which you can engage with the IEC openly and they can amend whatever that. And I think people should, you know, wake up and really recognize that the parliament, if you don't have confidence in your own parliament, then that's when you can run to the court. There's engagement. Okay. Lemegi, can you?
Thank you, Chair. I thought you represented us. No, Chair, no, as the ANC, we do compliment the IEC for their work as well as the political parties. And I hope with the political parties, we are going to adhere to our code of conduct and not give the IEC too much work to do. They must do the election work and actually amend the voting stations and election stations and let us all behave as according to what we have signed. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks. This thing has never happened in this court committee before, where I ask members to speak on behalf of their party. That never happened. I only do it because it's election time, so far was demanding it. Okay, can we now come to the
telling of the result to whatever center that was going to be the
thank you, Chairperson. The first slide actually captures the process very much in detail. It starts with an oral point that has won on it, and that's when we go to the voting station and vote there. Of course, it will take place in 19,726 places. It then goes to the second nodal point, which is noted as two there, where at the same voting station where voting has taken place, we count as soon as voting stops or closes. The counting will take place there until there is agreement or the count has been finalized at that voting station and the result slip will be filled in. There will be two result slips in this election and there will be both of them will be very different. Each of the result slips is very unique. From the printing process to where it must be delivered, you can't swap voting station one result slip with voting station two. You will know that every voting station has a unique number, and that unique number will have a barcode which will then be used for scanning when we talk about scanning later. The national ballot will have a different color and different numbers of political parties, I imagine, to that of the provincial ballot. It's not impossible to have the exact same numbers, but until now we haven't had. It might be that we do have. Once the results have been completed, these are completed in duplicate. A copy is left in a public space at the voting station, and the one copy is then sealed into a tamper-proof transparent envelope, and it is taken to the result capturing center. We have 286 offices in the country that will be used to capture this result, and it will be taken there. On arrival there, this is now where we say result slips to MEO and then we verify at the MEO office. You will typically arrive at the capturing center. There will be somebody that will receive the results. They will make sure that two result slips are delivered per voting station, the provincial result slip as well as the national result slip. They will check, which shouldn't be a problem, to see that the result slip for the province is indeed for that province. It's not a Western Cape result slip in Gauteng. It shouldn't happen, but they still, part of the verification is to ensure that that is the case. Once they have done the verification, they begin to scan the result slip into the scanning system. In other words, before the result slip is going to be captured, it would be scanned into the result system. I mean, into the system. I did indicate that there will be a barcode scanner on the face of the result slip. It's a very crucial point of picking up the unique VD number. It's not somebody capturing the VD number by hand. It is the scanner intelligently picking up the barcode, which is unique for every voting station, and scanning it in for that particular voting district. It will then indicate that results for that particular voting district for the provincial election as well as for the national elections have been received and have been scanned. Once they have been scanned, a data capturer will capture the result slip using the double entry and validation method. In other words, they capture the result slip once, they don't have the opportunity to save it, they capture it again, and if the capturing for the first, from the first capture and the capturing from the second capture agree all together, that result slip is then saved. If, for example, you capture for a particular party the first time around 1,000 votes and the second time 100 votes, that is, the system will not accept that, and it will require that the individual recaptures again. You will see at that nodal point number 5, there's result 1 and result 2, and both of them indicate the result as 3453, 3453, and therefore the results process continues. Once the double capturing has been satisfied, the system saves the result and prints out a copy of the result as captured. It then goes to the auditor, who looks at the copy of the result as captured with the image of that result slip, and then says, I'm happy with this. What's on the system is correct, and signs that result slip off. And the original copy will then go to filing, and the process of the result that exists now in the system goes through internal validations that we will perform. I will take you through the internal validations that we do perform, and we will take you there. I need to indicate to you that once you've gone through all of the validation processes, and the result is pasted at the National Result Center and the 9 provincial result centers, anyone who has access to the internet will be able to go onto the onto our website, call on a voting district, and see the original copy of the result slip as we have scanned. The result immediately becomes transparent and available to everybody that wants to see. At the same time, once they see the result in the scanned format, they'll be able to sit themselves and say, is this the result that we've got captured of, you know, onto the system? And, of course, more transparency than that, I think one cannot ask for. Let's go to slide number 2. Result slips must be scanned and the images must be available on the systems to enable the parties to perform comparative analysis. This has been a discussion that we've had extensively with political parties. In 2004, we have given parties the result slips as they came through. But what they did say to us at all levels, the provincial levels, in fact, from municipal capturing centers, provincial levels, and at national result center, they said, we do see this information, but we do not have any information to see the original result slip. And there were all sorts of requests to get result slips to be photocopied and faxed, and, you know, and we do think that the process that we have put into place will take care of that situation. We would not have to fax any documents. There will be a single source of information requirements and entry, and it can be accessed at that point. Result slips will be scanned at the capturing center and as we have indicated in the process flow. If we could hit the next slide, Stephen. There are a number of issues that we deal with when we deal with restrictions and validations. And I think this is one of the very important slides with respect to the integrity of results capturing. People have said, how do we know that the numbers of votes that are captured to voting stations will not be excessive or not too low? The voter's roll, it's a basic indication of how many people we should be expecting to come to a voting station. I'm saying it is an indication. We have set in the results system the numerical values that we cannot exceed. In total, if you look at South Africa, we now have 23,100,000 people that are registered. We cannot have a situation where 24 million people vote. Those things are built into the system. And the system has numerical values that it will tolerate, which are limited to predefined numbers of digits, which are allowed. For example, 23 million cannot suddenly be 23 billion or 23,000. It will it is put into the system, and it is expected that it will be validated against that number. The system has a number of buttons that you can save results, you can look at those things and amend whatever the case might be when there's an amendment to be made. And those buttons are disabled at processes where they should not be enabled. For example, you can't have a data capturer auditing a result. That cannot be. At that point, the system will not allow the person to do that. You can also not have an auditor capturing or verifying a result after it has been verified, a process that should be performed by someone that the chief electoral officer has delegated to deal with that function. So there have been separation of duties in that respect. The third bullet point, there's a slight error for which we are sorry. We validate that all fields are captured and correspond to the first and second capture. You see, when you capture the result for the first time and when you capture it for the second time, everything that you've captured for the first time must be captured the second time around and vice versa. If anything is not captured, even if you've skipped a party completely, it will not. It will not accept that result. So there are checks in the system that ensure that information that should be captured will be captured. We also validate that the total votes cast is equal to the votes cast for parties plus spoiled votes. This has been a very interesting issue coming out of 2004. In fact, parties came back and said, we want to see everything. The votes that have been cast, but which are spoiled, and we want to see that element of the spoiled votes with it. I guess it arises out of reconciliation of votes at voting stations as well, and it is now built into the system, and we shouldn't have any difficulty dealing with it further. We also do validations on whether the voting district and or ballot type is expected to give a result. In other words, the voting district would say we expect this provincial and this national ballot, and once we get that, it should be fine. We can't have a situation where we say, and we're only expecting to get a provincial result and not a national result. It's that kind of check and validation that we do. We have auditors that we engage. These are people from audit firms that we have secured on an open tender situation. And their role is to go to every one of the data capturing centers and actually audit the results as they have been captured in the system. Every one of those auditors has a very unique audit code, and the system will only take that code from that individual after he or she has validated in terms of their rebooting the system and gaining access to it. In terms of management of key processes and exceptions that occur, we do have a process where we deal with exceptions, and of course they will always be there. Some of those exceptions are caused by, the leniency to enfranchise people to vote, even when they are not in the areas where they would be or they are normally registered. And these checks built in are internal to us. In other words, here's a result captured, the first and second capture is agreed, but when we look at it, we find that there are more people there that have voted than should be the case. We then go back into the process. For example, people in areas of, you know, voting is normally a holiday, and people might say, no, you know, we're going to be voting from that voting station within our area, but we're not normally registered there. We will then go and look at are all the votes cast in there affecting any of the integrity of the result in one way or the other, and we will look at what is the tolerance of the exceptions. Do we have more provincial ballots than national ballots or vice versa? If so, what would be the implication? What is the possible cause? Can we check that indeed there was such an instance at the voting? And once all of those things are done, we then will release the results. There are exceptions, of course, that include variance in party votes between national and provincial, variance in total votes cast between national and provincial ballots, and a high number of Section 24A applications against votes cast. You will remember that Section 24A votes are those votes for persons who are not at the station where they are ordinarily resident or where they have applied for registration, but they are allowed to vote elsewhere. And, of course, if they are within the province where they would be ordinarily resident, they will get the provincial ballot as well. But if they are outside of that province, they will get a copy of, or I mean, they will go get a national ballot only. There is a process, and we have explained that process when we were dealing with preparations for elections. I think it is important when we deal with exceptions and things to say that the barcode scanner unit, or the ZipZip, as we often call it, will have the entire copy of the voters roll with it. Everyone coming to the voting station on election day, there will be a paper roll, not a sticker, a paper roll. When you join the queue, we will scan your ID number. It will say, yes, you are at this voting station. You are number 10 on the voters' roll. And print just a small sticker that says that helps or seeks to help the presiding officer to find you quickly on the voters' roll and not to waste time. So it is that process where someone is, and it will indicate on that sticker that you are entitled to both the national and the provincial ballot, or if you're outside of your province, it will say you're only entitled to the national ballot. Edit windows, Stephen, the next slide. Where an error has been made for an edit window to exist, this happens really where something has been found in the process of the data capturing through the process, that the result was captured properly through and through, that there is an exception that we need to follow. And when we do that exception, it then transpires that there has been an error that, together with political parties that are present observing this process, we need to fix. And I mean, it's very difficult to imagine an instance now, but where, for example, someone brings to our attention after the process has gone through that there's an error, we do have an opportunity to go back and fix that error through what we call an edit window. It then becomes very transparent. One can still see the original copy of the result as was captured, and we'll see the amended copy, and the distinction will be made very clear why the original copy differs from the second copy and what it is that we were seeking to address and how we have addressed it. Of course, these things happen in the presence of political parties that are observing the process, and there is nothing hidden away from the parties. The PO will consider requests, and if satisfied with a grant for the edit, will forward such requests to us. We have made this provision because it is possible that with the amount of transparency that we have, even ordinary South Africans sitting in the comfort of their homes or offices might raise something with a political party or directly with us. And if it is so that we need to look at this matter, we will open the edit window and look at it and deal with that matter. Once the request has been considered, then the edit window will be opened. The next slide is it's a very detailed slide of the process. May I deal with the principles only? Once we right at the far left hand right corner of that slide, once we start with the result slips that have arrived at the result center, with sorting them and making sure that they are accounted for one voting station one by one. We then go into the scanning as I've indicated, and I say this because I need to highlight that the process of checking is immediately after the slips have arrived and they are scanned so that they become immediately available in the system. They are scanned before they are double capture them on the system, and you can very clearly see in the block on the top right-hand corner, that once the auditor is satisfied that these things are fine, that there is no recapturing required, and that they have signed that off, the result slip is confirmed, and it is committed to our result database. That result database is very, very secure. People have said to us, isn't that a risk that the results are in one place? In fact, that's replication. We don't put it here for purposes of security, but at that process, the results are replicated and into more than one results database for storage, and the results databases are not at the same location. You'll appreciate that we won't deal with those details on paper here. And once those results are in that database, they would then be put onto, replicated further onto a results system that you and I, as members of the public, will have access to. Whilst those that are working at the IEC have this secure database somewhere that they have put, that it continues to replicate the data that it receives to other sites, including our website. And the results, as they are updated on the results operation center screens, they are updated on the strength of the database that all of us, as members of the public, have information. So it is possible that you will see at home the results as they come to the result center. You also see them immediately in the comfort of your office or your home. Editable reports for political parties. I have indicated earlier on that a number of requests have been put to us. We are pleased to say that we will have result information available in downloadable formats that parties will simply indicate to us. We do make provision in our result operation centers for political parties to have a number of screens, and they will indicate to us in what format they would want those results downloaded. Some will say they want them in CSV file format, others say Excel. Others say PDF is okay, whatever it is a party preference that we deal with. In terms of the information contained in those result slips, the data that we give to parties, there is the election type for each voting district. In other words, you can say, I want to see the national election results per voting station. You can call that alone, or you can say, I want to see the provincial one. And then you can say which province you're talking about, which municipality, which voting district. You can call that voting station by name. You can look at the registered number of voters in that VD. That result will tell you, which is a tall order, because in the past, this information was not necessarily available in one format, and parties were requesting for it. One can then look at valid votes for each party. One would be able to see spoiled votes. And most importantly, you will see what time and date that result was published. All results come at different times. But when the result is committed to our results database and it's replicated, that is the time and date stamp that we will then give as the time at which that result was finally processed. The functionality to enable parties to search for results using a combination of search criteria. But for us, it is important that we limit that to voting station name and voting district number. One can go and call a voting station. You can say, I know it's a school, and go type a school. But you're going to have a whole list of schools coming up. You still need to remember the name of the school. We accept that the number, the unique number of the voting station, may not necessarily be known to an ordinary voter. They know their school as Mpilem Primary School, and they will look for Mpilem Primary School. And that's what we make available. The parties also requested that reports be displayed both or have the display in terms of both the VD number and the voting station. There was also a further request that we need to have, if someone is looking at the results every 15 minutes, they want to see only the new stuff that has come since they last had a look at the result system. And we have placed in functionality that says refresh criteria to search for every so often. You know, you could say, I want to see the most recent 100 results in a particular area. It will give you those results. Or one could say, I want to see only the most recent results per time period, say the last 15 minutes or the last hour. Or one could say, I want to only see the results for the single VD that I'm dealing with. Sorry. There's also an issue. Often it's not a matter that deals with, it's not a result system issue per se, but parties have raised it a lot with us. And being our major client on the day, it deals with the issues that they may raise on election day, which in their opinion are important for us to consider before we even determine the results. And these issues may range from a thing that says somebody has been turned away from a voting station because they are deceased, but they came in person and we deal with that issue. We deal with lots of them on election day. Or someone does not appear on the voter's roll. They are not regarded as South African citizens and things like that. The important thing is that these issues are locked. Parties have a code to the system that we use, which will give them access to all of the issues that they have locked, and they'll be able to see who is dealing with the issue from the IEC's point of view. And as soon as the issue has been dealt with, they will then know what was the resolution, other than being notified formally. And they will see how long it took to resolve the issue. There is an important element of the results processing system auditing. We, like in all other years, once we have developed a result system, we invite political parties to bring their systems auditors. We say to them, this is how the system is supposed to work. In other words, the specification of what the system will allow and what it will not allow. And we say to them, you can put your auditors here, or you can invite your auditors from that date to that date to come and audit the system. Put something in there and see what comes out at the end. And if it is so that you're finding that there are errors, let us know. Let's fix them until you're happy. Let's get done. Since we started with this, there has never been a situation where we had comebacks. We will open the system again this year. I must indicate to yourselves, as we have indicated to parties, that process is going to be very tight, but it exists. It's going to be a window period where parties will test the system end to end. But by the time they do that, we would have done it ourselves as well. We will give them our certificate of compliance, you know, the specs to what the system does, and they can audit it from there. We will also have a training and a dry run period before the system goes live. In other words, there will be a day before elections where all of our 15,000 voting stations will capture something simultaneously. We'll give them, normally we say to them, on Monday between 12:30 and 1 o'clock, we want everybody at the same time to be on the system to capture this result. It's not one copy of the result. Every one of them will capture a different copy of a result. But it's a stress test, if one may say that. And we will see what the results come out. And that information is also available to parties. I wouldn't want to deal with the declaration of results. It's just a thing that it's in law. It's not about the result system itself. But the result will comply to that process. I don't know if there are questions, but my presentation will end there.
Thank you very much. Jake's, I see hands already. Jake's,
the presenter from the start mentioned that all parties were represented at that congregation. But what I would like to know, what was the reaction of the parties? That's what I didn't hear. Did they support the system as a whole? Well, what was the outcome of that meeting from party side?
Thank you, Chair. Just to ask, the key principle to us, obviously, is that one voter votes receives two ballots and only votes once. That's the key issue. Is the fact that 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds have been able to register, is there any chance of those persons being able to vote where they come and arrive? Could only possibly the ICS be on a fraudulent basis, but there are a large numbers. My two sons are 17. They've now registered to vote. Obviously, they're not going to vote, but is there a chance that in certain areas where there's not vigilant party activity from monitoring those areas that they could be allowed to vote? That's the first issue. Then, secondly, as one scans those results, you'll recall the last election where we had that court case relating to the picking up, the capturing, and that was where provincial and nationally there was a voting station where the ANC were not given their votes and it went to ZAPA, and that resulted in the court case that gave the ACDP that extra seat. Has that lacuna been now eradicated totally, so that can't happen again? And I must say in that case the ANC was very gracious to assist us in that court case. But just to indicate that those were some of the lacuna that occurred, that and I also just wanted to ask you, one of our difficulties at the IQ was that the information was not available long enough, because in that process you had all the audits were done, everything was done, and it was only us that picked up that error, notwithstanding all the auditing having been done. The parties then picked it up, but at a certain stage all the information was removed. And we, if I remember correctly, it might have been an overload of information. But it seems that that has been addressed as well. Thank you, Chairperson.
One of the things that I want to raise is obvious. You see, last time when we called you to come and present the preparations, you did not deal with this detailed presentation. It was in the passing. When the chair says, now in fact, we're going to do electronic counting and all of that. That is why we have called you back again today. Now, calling you back, there are very serious concerns that one we have, as much as you may be engaging with your political parties, those that are engaging. Let us get to the security of the system first. Secondly, you talked of training of your staff and all of that. And different from the previous system that we're using. You see, these electronic counting things, as much as we want to appreciate technology that you're bringing. I think for one, you know, I have a concern based on the details that I'm receiving here, and a very serious one, that, you know, and there was never a trial run of the system, meaning that through your voter registration or whatever, you know, I'm not sure where you have taken this system, you know, to test it, that is working. You want credible, free and fair elections. And already you're dealing with a situation where parties are now beginning to complain about, you know, the voters' role and all of that. I'm very much worried. That is why I'm raising this thing of, you know, the concern that may have been raised by political parties at that time and their involvement. It goes back to that point that this case raised. That in your presentation of this system, what has been the reaction? Obviously, you're saying you are responding to some of the concerns that have been raised before. Solutions are solutions, you know. They come, they collapse, they die sometimes. They give good results, sometimes they don't. And having to move from the manual system that we have and going to this electronic system. That's what, because I'm trying to work on the details that you're putting here. And this detail for me, it sort of confuses me worse. Because we need a situation that, we need a situation that we need to be satisfied. This parliament, it's not about political parties here, it's about parliament now. That whatever system that you put in place is a credible, well-tested, well-secured system. Indexing and scanning of papers may be tampered with, and if there's no clear security on the system, that's another thing that we want to hear from you as to how you deal with those issues. Okay? I see you're very excited because you're introducing new technologies, but Parliament is a particular. It's very serious what you're raising, because we don't want tomorrow to say someone did not scan or double scan, or system was tampered with, we're not able to get the results and all of that. And we need to be satisfied ourselves. So let us maybe give us that detail. My detail is around the security of the system that you bring. Where was it tried? Where have you piloted this thing? You're dealing with very serious national, provincial, contested elections. Seriously so. Highly contested. And you want to come up with a credible result at the end of the day when you say this is what parties have won and all of that. Coach, let me give you... I'm trying to express myself to the concern, but I think members can open it up. Luana Mimiki, if you want to say something, you can come in. Coach, I think you'll note for now.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, let me start by saying, as I still remember correctly, Chairperson, after we got a recommendation from Francis Lapet with regard to some changes, we categorically stated clearly that we maintain status quo. Number two, Chairperson, I just want to find out from the IEC whether which regulation is supporting their new system. Number three, Chairperson, we get presentation. Meanwhile, they have already advertised, get the auditors. Meanwhile, the parliamentary procedure says before they can do anything, they must present to parliament. The last point question, Chairperson, with regard to the security. You see, Chairperson, this thing of technology, many people are complaining that somebody went to the bank only to find out of your account. Electronically, somebody has just taken out your money. What guarantee do they have between the so-called scanning machine results and the head office? These people who know the computer cannot manipulate and add more votes or reduce more votes to the other people. Thank you, Chairperson. But I personally, Chairperson, I don't support this method.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I align myself with what the Cakes has said with regard to the response by political parties. As I was listening to Ntate Mosotho, Ikare, there has been communication between political parties and the IEC regarding this system, and the Home Affairs has been left out, which it gives me a bit of a problem. And I also want to seek clarity, Ntate Mosotho. You know, some of us, we are slow, which is this system, where is it actually going to be happening? Is it at the election center, or we're going to start at the voting station? And is it going to be done nationally, or how are we going to do this, you know, in areas where there's no electricity? What is going to happen? Thank you, Chair. Because maybe there are a few things that we have to explain to just clarify before we go into the technicalities.
Mm-hmm.
One, we're not going to count the votes electronically. The votes are going to be counted manually at the voting station, as we have always done. That's the first thing to say. Two, to say this is not a new system. This is a system that we have always used. The only addition that we have put is the scanning of the result slip. We have put that in place to improve on our transparency, one, and on our efficiency. We introduced this particularly after the mistakes that we discovered that Honorable Swart, you know, alluded to. Because in 2004, as a result of human error, the results of the ANC were given, captured as a result of ASAPO, and that affected the ACDP. The ACDP lost a seat as a result of that. And that came about as a result of the mistake in the manual capturing of the results. In order to deal with that, we will capture manually twice, as Mosotho has pointed out. But to improve on that, we'll also scan the result slip. So that in case where there is a dispute, a political party can come and say, I was a party agent at my voting station. This is how the result slip looked like. And if there's a dispute, we can then pull this result slip out of the system so that everybody can see it for verification purposes. So it's not a new system. It's just a tiny enhancement that in addition to capturing, we then have an image of the result slip in the system. The third thing to say is that in terms of the law, the IEC, and that's what is in the Electoral Commission Act, has to maintain close liaison with political parties that are represented in Parliament. After every election, we sit with our PLC members, party liaison committee, say, how did we do the last time around? What is it that we can improve on? And that happened immediately after the 2004 election. And this issue that we are talking, the scanning, was one of the issues that was identified by our party liaison committee as a weakness in the system. And together with them, we then agreed that this is how we're going to improve our system. And I also have to point out that as we were developing this system, we took them along with us every step of the way, to the point where they even sent the technical people from the political parties to check if we are on course. So it's something that we have been doing with the political parties as required by the law for almost 2 years to arrive at this point. Thank you, Chair.
We have dealt with the issue of security of the system.
The security of the system, Chairperson, is impeccable. I need to say that. Part of the auditing of the system is not just on the process. It's also on hacking and the manner in which the infrastructure that is put around the system will function. And we are satisfied that steps that we have taken to put around the systems, including backup and security measures, are of the highest order you can get anywhere.
We are satisfied. We are not satisfied. So it means that you find we can sit to our concerns. It's okay.
I thought that
if you don't want to go into detail, or you want a situation where we must have a closed meeting, we can arrange that. As much as the law gives you the right to engage with political parties, we are raising a concern. Members are saying we think that we're not satisfied much, but we need to guarantee these members, assure this parliament, that the system that you are putting is secured, and you are not giving us the decision. You just say that we're satisfied on your side on the measures that you've put. It's okay. What we can then do, because we want to raise to satisfy ourselves as parliament, we may take the matter up to another level.
I don't know how Chairperson, you would want the matter dealt with, except to say I imagine that the IEC would not have a problem. Let me say, perhaps I didn't say it strong enough. I did say at a point when results are committed to the system, they are saved at more than one location simultaneously. Even if one side would go down, it's not something that you as members of the public or anyone outside would see. We would be able to say one of our three locations, for example, has gone down. Perhaps there's been a power failure. Perhaps there's been a communications problem. We are able to deal with that. But we're dealing with more than two sites at a time when we process this result. And we make sure that all of them have the backups necessary to continue to have them to run. You will recall that the IEC has said when one of the major things that we deal with when we deal with these things, it's really the telecommunications infrastructure, and we do make sure that that telecommunications infrastructure is in place in such a way that it will safeguard this. On the part that deals with the technical, let's say testing the system for hacking of the results, it's a very practical process that persons or parties that want to do that, and we have parties that have put in the past systems auditors from accredited audit firms to come and test the system and give them a report. That opportunity still exists. With respect to a physical infrastructure, we operate from the result centers. That's not where the results are captured. It's where the results are posted. The results are captured at just about 300 different sites countrywide. And even at those sites, when the results are captured, there are backup measures on the site that ensure that the captured results, even as they are sent, they are replicated to a site where we have our recovery or the sites that are meant for our own recovery. I only said that the security is as tight as one can say, because in IT terms, that's what a normal banking operation would look like. And on that day, we look like a mini bank ourselves, and we have that kind of security in place. I will leave the other things to, if we have to have an open session, or I'll leave that to the commission.
Chairman, I just wanted to say, like the CEO has indicated in her response, this system is not new, and therefore there was no change in the regulation. We have not changed any aspect of the regulation. But even if we had to change provisions within the Electoral Act, you know that you are the people who are going to be doing it. We can't. So understand the system here as like the transportation system. Remember in 1994 what was happening. All these results, all the ballot papers and ballot boxes were taken to one central place where they were counted. And then that, with the new Electoral Act, changed. And we said voting is going to be happening manually, and counting will happen manually at a voting station where you register and at the voting station where you vote. So immediately after that, there is counting that happens. Now, after that has happened, and because there's another question that was asked to say, what do you do about voting stations that don't have electricity? After you've done that, because the system is manual, you don't need electricity to count. You don't need electricity to indicate, which party has got how many votes. As long as you've got light, you can be able to see whatever light system that is actually utilized at that particular area. So when that is done, you put a result slip outside. Having done that, we said, and this is part of the enhancement, it's like you are taking a photo of the same result slip with the signature of the political parties. If you had representatives at that voting station, it is just a photo of that. And we say, in order to make sure that you are satisfied
and there is transparency. We are now going to transmit this photo of the results slip electronically so that any person anywhere can be able to see that this is the numbers that we're receiving correspond to this photocopy that we receive that has actually been sent electronically. So what Mosotho was also saying is that once you've done that, where you will now transmit this information electronically, it is at the municipal office. Now that everybody knows how the results went at the voting station, you take this to a municipal office where we have an office, where there is electricity, where we've got our systems, where we've got our computer, not the computer of the municipality. Everything safeguarded by the IEC. Then you transmit this information, you capture this information into this. In other words, as I'm saying, the system that we've been describing is what has been happening, but it is basically the transport system. So how do we in Pretoria get the results that the results of people who have voted in a particular remote area so that we can be able to say this is how people have actually voted in that particular area. So there is nothing new. Regulations or the provisions within the Electoral Act have not been violated. We have not changed anything in the Electoral Act. We just try to enhance the capacity of the system. But apart from that, I would understand the chairperson to be suggesting that perhaps members of the portfolio committee would want to come to the head office just to be able to see how the system operates. Because as Mosotho has indicated, all the political parties will also be given an opportunity to go through this. But perhaps an invite, a formal invite, should actually be extended to the portfolio committee to say, also come and see how the system operates.
Take it easy. The role of Parliament, we have to do this thing. We don't have to be defensive. We need to make sure that members of Parliament understand. We represent the public that must go and vote. As much as we're here representing political parties, the public out there will not have this detailed information. And we raise this thing on behalf of the public. Now, the issue of what it may be, however small it may be, the intervention we have made to sort of, you know, a introduce technology that is relevant. The question that we are raising is the security of that information. The very same system that you are putting there, is it audited by credible IT? It may be auditors. No. Has it gone through either your NIA and whatever things? I don't want to get to that detail. But I'm raising this on the basis of all those checks and balances that must be in place. Because we don't want the situation where you run this wonderful election and then tomorrow it comes out that there were problems. Especially when, you know, critical to the point that we're raising is that when this thing came, it came in passing, by the way, to Parliament. It did not come factual as we are putting it now. It was, by the way, by the chairperson, and I said, by the way, we'll be counting the results in this session. And that, by the way, for us is a very serious one. So this engagement here is informed by what we call free and fair elections, obviously, making sure that whatever results, whatever tempering of the system, I mean, the COSIs have put it, but not in detail, we're not IT gurus. We may want to engage further with IT gurus to look at indexing and scanning of documents, which I will tell you that in that field, you can interfere with the system. But that's why we're emphasizing wanting to understand the security measures that have been put in place. As the system itself audited by credible IT, so that to make sure that whatever that you put there, the result that you want to see becomes the exact result that you want to see. Nobody will tamper with the system in between. So I'm saying that for me, there's a further engagement that I believe we should do. I'll tell you, I mean, it's a simple thing that we have that responsibility. Oversight, accountability, informing the public. This thing is very new to us. We have engaging with political parties. We have not had, either from our political parties, I'm not sure if members have had, an opportunity to engage on this new enhancement that you are putting in. Members of the public will at some point have to know what then happened to the result. What causes sometimes, you know, your civil wars are caused by the results of the elections. And one party decides to say, but we are robbed because of the system that was put there. And then it's sparked into a civil war. That's why I'm saying for us it's very necessary. But issues of this nature, no matter how small they may be, but for us we are very much interested in wanting to know the credibility of whatever that you're putting, the security of it and all of that. So on that note, without going to head office, I want to give members an opportunity to go study this system as we have put it. Members of this committee, go back, engage on this thing. Because it's for the first time we get this detail. We'll invite you. We have access. I know you're busy. You report to Parliament. It's not a problem. we're going to do that. We're going to invite you. We'll invite you. We'll ask Parliament to give us a slot again. We will sit with whatever experts. If the ACDP have experts in IT, they'll look at that. You know. But at some point as a committee, we need to be very satisfied. You know, because, you know, I'm taking it back from an allegation that came earlier that says you have removed people from the voter roll. And the challenge number of people do so, and that was said by a very senior leader in this country. That's why I said that we treat this issue quite very seriously and want to make sure that when we get to this election, all the systems that you have put in place to create a free and fair election are tested, and now we are very clear, and we are very satisfied. So it's not a problem. We've received this. We'll call you. We'll have a session where we'll engage further with you. We'll identify more detail, either questions, because sometimes, you know, because we are so used to this thing of committee always ask these questions. So when you go to Parliament, these questions that we expect. I said it earlier, and it was confirmed by your chairperson at some point. But to demonstrate the maturity of this committee, we don't just take things as we are given. Thank you very much. We will, in fact, engage further ourselves on this, whatever presentation is given us, and then we'll call you, and then we'll want to engage further with you, and we'll give you the green light to do it. It's this committee that but President, as much as you proclaim the election, it's not going to take place until such matters do the wrong. You can do that as Parliament, but I'm not going to do it. I'm simply saying that we need to satisfy ourselves. It may be a costly experience, what you call exercise for you, but the role of Parliament comes in here. And that is this committee, this is what I think we should close this matter on.
Okay?
It's fine, Commissioner. I know that we appointed you, Parliament appointed you to be the Commissioner. You know, to yourself there. So we have that role, to appoint you and to report to us, and then to say to you that we're not satisfied, or we're satisfied, really without interfering with your independence. We're not going to interfere with that, wanting to instruct you, but we want to be satisfied. Right? So on that note, that people must not go interpreting that there is Parliament again wanting to interfere in the constitution, the independence of the Electoral Commission. That's not the purpose. The purpose is understanding what preparations that you're putting in place, what systems you're putting in place, are very secure, and all of that, we're going to get free and fair elections out of the whole thing. And then the next round of years, maybe a visit to head office, you know, and really engage further. On that note, with regard to this issue, I think we'll leave it there. The 16-year-old. The 16-year-old voters, they don't come to the voter roll. Their names will not appear in the voter roll. They will only load them once they turn 18. But once you're still under 16, 17 there, your name will not appear in the voter roll. I'm right, Mucha. They have their own, you know, youth league there, the youth league. Of the yeah. So now, can we now come back to the last point, Chair? The last point will be on the issue of the overseas voters, which was raised, and I know that the matter, I'm not sure it's subject to Chair, but Parliament has the right to know that the subject to Chair has been to apply, because already the first court has already pronounced itself on what must happen with regard to the right of the South Africans who are out of the country. And we have said ourselves in this committee that we're not against any arrangement where we denied our people the right, but we're talking of more of challenges. And based on the previous experiences where you have only 1,000 people that voted, and this is what sort of keep on informing us on that. But let us hear you, and then as much as we respect, in fact, even the decision of the court. I mean, we do not want to be seen in contrast to the court. What the court has decided, if it's fair enough, then it's within the Constitution, nobody has the right to come back and say, but it's not whatever. So on that note, we'll want to give you an opportunity just to share with us this whole arrangement and this complying of the what arrangement are we putting in place to make sure that I know that if the DA, I think, and other parties are taking you now to the Constitutional Court. But Mike Lowe is here. I think he can advise the legal, you know, people in the DA that the matter was resolved in the portfolio committee. So there's no need to go to the High Court. So on that note, Madam, shall we?
Chairperson, thank you very much. On overseas voting, as you know, there are about 5 cases that have been brought. Some of them brought on behalf of people who are already registered as voters and who are either overseas or will be overseas on voting day. And the others are brought on behalf of people who are not yet registered as voters and who are overseas and who desire to exercise their right to vote. The specific question as to what will happen if the application succeeds is very difficult, Chairperson, to speculate on that because these matters address different things. In the matter that was brought at the Transvaal Provincial Division at the Pretoria High Court, the court, as you know, in that matter, struck down certain words in the Act, the effect of which is that all people who are overseas will be allowed to vote provided they are registered. Because in that case, the court struck down the word temporary from the Act. It also struck down the categories of people who are entitled to vote. So, and these cases now are all going to go to the Constitutional Court on the 4th and 6th of March. We don't know how the Constitutional Court will rule because, as I have indicated, these cases address different things. Different applicants are asking for different things from the court. Others say allow everybody, the IEC should go and register everybody who is overseas so that they can vote. Others say, okay, while we accept that only those who are registered should be allowed to vote, however, do away with the 15 days notice period. This is the notice period in the law which says anybody who is overseas who wants to vote must give the IEC 15 days notice from the date of proclamation that they intend to vote. There is an application that's just write down even the 15 days now. We don't know what the court is going to say. We don't know whether the court will say, okay, we hear you, but we think that even if we declare these sections unconstitutional, we feel that Parliament should now be given the opportunity to go and amend the law. So what I'm saying to you is sitting where we are as the IEC, because of the different issues that these cases address, it is extremely difficult for us to anticipate or predict the outcome.
Thank you very much, CEO. Thank you very much. Members, is there any input from the CEO with regard to overseas voting? Waiting for the court to decide. So,
I appreciate the difficulty in anticipating, but I do recall there was an article in the paper that indicated that if the court was to find that it related that in favour of those that were not registered, it could well result in the postponement of the elections. That is surely a practical consideration that the IEC needs to deal with. That, and maybe I could just hear a comment, is that a possible scenario? Again, in the realm of speculation, but clearly it's a practical issue that one needs to face to consider.
Let me have a try. That's just to add on to what the CEO has said. All these different cases, if there is a finding of unconstitutionality and invalidity of certain sections, that has to go to the Constitutional Court for confirmation. There has been such a finding in one case, the Richter case in the TPD, and that case has now gone to the Constitutional Court to consider confirmation. We have, from our side, written to the Chief Justice to see if there is no possibility of consolidating all these things that eventually has to go to the Constitutional Court in any case, to have this done in one trial, one hearing, and one judgment by the Constitutional Court. And the court has accommodated us by issuing instructions based on this one case that is now already before the court for confirmation. And the court has opened up the opportunity to all litigants in all of these other cases to join in and to have this whole thing argued by the before the Constitutional Court. And the court has set down the dates of the 4th and the 6th of March for arguing these cases in the court. At the moment, there are still, I think, one or two of the litigants in one or two of these cases that have not yet indicated that they will join this process. But hopefully, in the end, we will all succeed to have all these things done simultaneously in the Constitution. That will be in everybody's interest to do that. And if the case could be dealt with speedily postponement, that came from an application, urgent motion in the very Richter case, calling upon the court to interdict the president from proclaiming the election. They didn't ask for a postponement then. They said they want to interdict the president from proclaiming the election, which would have resulted in a postponement. They wanted this interdict to be open-ended, the interdict to be against the president to not to proclaim before all these cases have been resolved in the end. That interdict failed. The process failed, the process was flawed, and it has not been reactivated. And at the moment, as it stands at the moment, the president has proclaimed and the premiers have proclaimed, and one can really not see any possibility of postponement of the elections as a result of these cases. Thank you, sir.
Sir, thank you very much. I think it was quite informative. What is that question? Let me give you a fire.
Thank you, Chair. Seeing this matter seems to be getting somewhere now, and then likely we might get the positive result of not postponing or coming to a point of postponing the election. But then, as much as we would like everybody to vote, the cost implication, let us say maybe the court rules for everybody to vote, what might be the cost implications of this very same outcome of court? Will it cost us even beyond the budget that has been put by the IEC that we will probably run this election with about 1 million, but because of the overseas voters, we would need more than 1 million, and then where is the IEC going to raise funds and get this thing sorted out? Resources. Thank you.
And I get the point. Obviously, the point of the member is informed by our room, Ajay, the parliament. We pass your budget. So at that point, I think it's informed by what we have given you, what you have asked for, and what are the implications. Last time we asked you, we said to you, give us the rundown of the cost with regard to the last overseas voting. We're still waiting for it, I think. No, we're still waiting for it till today. It did not come. It did not come, and always questions are coming from outside, journalists and members of the public asking, Parliament, how much did you spend on that motion? So I think you can respond before we wrap it up without really taking from
I'll just respond on the cost of the 2004 overseas voting, and I would like to apologize sincerely to honorable members for not giving you this information in advance. It just slipped us. Yes, we do. We really do. Chairperson, in 2004, a total of 1,568 South Africans based overseas, 1,568 voted. Well, that's, I don't want, let's just say voted. Because, okay, let me not go there. Out of those, 1,379 were people in government service. 1,379 were people in government service, and 189 were people who belonged to other categories. Those were in business, on a business trip, sporting code, or sporting events, or what was the third category? Holiday, yeah. Those constituted, there were 189 of them, bringing the total to 1,568. And we ran those elections at the cost of 581,709. 581,709.95. That was
the cost. Thank you. Chairperson, I would just for the record make the point that irrespective of the cost involved, if a court declares that people have the right to vote if they're overseas, that is what should be. It's actually irrelevant what the cost is in any event, whether Parliament has oversight or not.
This is the position of the committee. The position of the committee, unless you missed it, because sometimes you don't attend meetings, or you miss, the position of the committee is that we recognize and we respect the right of all South Africans to vote. Right? That's the position of this committee. That is why we even went as far as saying that those who have taken this matter.